We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Joe Sheehan.
I don't know if you read what Joe Sheehan wrote.
I did.
Baseball America, SI, and the Joe Sheehan newsletter.
To right center, back of the warning track, the wall, it is gone!
He writes what Dan reads.
Reading is good.
Joe Sheehan with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Nothing beats championship hockey. Your Chicago Wolves are tied at one game apiece with the Charlotte Checkers in the Calder Cup Finals. Wolves are home tomorrow, Thursday, and Saturday at Allstate Arena for Game 3, 4, and 5. Visit ChicagoWolves.com. Joe Sheehan is on Twitter at Joe_Sheehan. He joins us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. So first day of the MLB draft is in the books. Joe, what is interesting to you or significant to you at all for what you do about that first draft day?
I have to be honest, Dan, back when, I want to say it was the mid-2000s, Baseball Prospectus signed Kevin Goldstein away from Baseball America. And pretty much from that point forward, the draft kind of became a very tertiary part of my world. There was a time, you go back to the A's with the Moneyball draft and the early 2000s, where we really figured we could use performance analysis to build a better draft. And I think what we learned over a pretty quick period of time is that we didn't do that. The draft is really the province of skills analysis, of scouts. From a writing standpoint, it's the province of reporters. So for me personally, I consume draft content, but I'm completely useless when it comes to doing analysis. I can do some base level analysis. I can look at concepts over time. Guys, we've talked about the Cubs' inability to kind of generate pitching. I think we talked last week. I think I said Dylan Maples was the only innings that they've gotten out of the draft this year. But in terms of, can I tell you that, you know, J.J. Bleda was a better pick than C.J. Abrams? I'm not your guy for that.
So I'm wondering then, Joe, how much we talked with Jed Hoyer when the season started. He said the game has changed so much in the last 2 years with the advanced cameras and metrics and Kinetrax and all that jazz. And I'm wondering how quickly after these kids are drafted, before they go into some sort of advanced camera mechanism and then they start making swing changes right away or start making mechanical changes right away. Have teams changed the way they adapt their prospects? It's not just a handbook anymore, I would imagine. There's cameras involved.
What's interesting, I'm in the middle of the MVP Machine, a book that comes out today by Travis Sawchuk and Ben Lindbergh, and they write a lot about how, you know, I guess the Astros bought like 75 of these Edgertronic cameras a few years back, and nobody else at the time had bought more than six. Now everybody's getting them now. So some organizations will have them up and down the organization, so when the kid reports to Salem Kaiser or wherever the heck they're going to in the Pioneer League, there'll be cameras set up at the stadium there. Some organizations, probably they won't get the kids onto the camera until next year. One of the interesting things is that, you know, college baseball is really where a lot of these things are happening as well. So a lot of these kids have some experience working in front of these cameras. And I know a lot of teams brought in players they were considering drafting, brought them to their major league ballpark where they have the cameras set up. So there is some familiarity with it, and I think it's only going to continue as, you know, one of the things that comes up in the book is, you know, J.D. Martinez talking to Mookie Betts. Well, as all of these drafted kids come into an organization now, you know, as they, some of them end up in Major League Camp, as some of them end up in these workout spaces in the offseason, they're going to be exposed to players who have used these tools. So it's not even a top-down thing anymore with the organizations. It's player-to-player. Huh. And in terms of making an impact, that's a better form of communication for these guys than getting it from a coach or a stat head or an analyst. Player to player, hey, this worked for me. This also worked for Justin Turner, who you might have seen lives in a big house now. It can work for you.
One of the romantic baseball stories we've enjoyed over the years is contending team makes bet on fading veteran, hoping for lightning in a bottle, as the Cubs have done with Carlos Gonzalez, a longtime Cub killer with a 928 OPS against them, has a terrific game yesterday. I don't have my hopes up, but I do, still as a fan, harbor the love of stories like this and hoping for the best, because it's just cool.
The way you set it up, I thought you were talking about Baseball America signing me.
Oh, you're in your prime. Come on.
You know, I really can't say I was that excited about this. You take Carlos Gonzalez back to opening day 2017. He's been a below-average hitter, basically an average defender. The speed's gone from his game. He's only even attempted 11 steals in the last 2.5 seasons. I don't think there's a lot there, but you're right, Dan. You know, this has been a story. You go back to Cesar Cedeno in 85.
Yes, I got his numbers right
Cardinals.
Here.
Lord, you
82 plate appearances, 434, 463, 750 slash line, and OPS plus of 235.
Yeah, and they ended up winning the National League pennant and losing the World Series. The Denkinger call obviously was a big part of that. It could happen. There's a principal, Boris McCracken, who was the first guy to say, hey, pitchers don't really control their results on balls in play. Said, you know, anybody can hit anything in 60 at-bats. Now, Cargo is going to get more than 60 at-bats if he hits well. But, yeah, there's a lightning in a bottle element to this. I think it gets back to some of what we talked about, kind of bring it full circle. The Cubs' inability. I mean, they've had the four first-round draft picks that have done well. But their inability to kind of do with the Cardinals thing, which is generate all of these 1-2-1 play, yeah. 1-2-win players, is how you end up reaching for a Carlos Gonzalez in the middle of the summer.
Speaking of one of those draft picks that has done really well, Javier Baez has not had a great last 2 weeks or so. 24 strikeouts in 54 at bats, and the slash line doesn't look all that pretty either. What am I supposed to do when everyone in baseball realigns their sights on just how high Javier Baez can ascend? And then he goes to a 15-16 game stretch that looks as bad as Javi Baez can look. Normal kind of stuff?
Connor, I literally just said it. Anybody in baseball can hit anything in 60 at-bats. I literally just said it, man. It doesn't matter. It literally, when a player hits in 2 weeks, man, it just doesn't matter. These guys, the internal variance of a baseball player is much wider than whatever you think it is. These guys can get absolutely white hot for 2 weeks, and they get absolutely dead cold for 2 weeks. And it's going to look worse with a guy like Javi Baez. I used to talk about this with Garrett Anderson. Like, Garrett Anderson would go through these stretches where he'd hit 155, but because they were all ground balls to second base, it didn't feel as bad. But when Javi Baez is up there striking out in 45% of his at-bats, and I think we all love watching Javi, but when he looks bad, man, he looks bad.
Oh, yeah.
So it's that... visceral, oh my God, how are you swinging at the 83rd consecutive slider that you know you can't reach? We get frustrated watching him. But when I look at Javi Baez, I see the same guy he was last year. He's going to swing at everything. He's going to hit the ball a lot of the time. He's going to be an incredibly valuable defender even when he's not hitting. I don't worry about 2 weeks, man. I just don't do it.
But are we going to change the 60 at-bat number of the 2 weeks or something at some point as we get better and better about finding out what small sample sizes really are, you know, with the camera work and the, you know, granular kind of analysis you're able to do?
I think the information... How about this? I think the time it takes to be confident that a change is real, we might be able to look back and say, oh, look at this 1 week in June where he did this and it stuck. I think we'll know that retroactively, but I think knowing that in real time is just not going to really work. And of course, you know, that's really talking about positive changes, right? I mean, Javi Baez hasn't made, at least as far as I can tell, any changes to his game. He's just not hitting the ball real well, right? I don't think this is the result of some kind of mechanical change. I think this is just one of those two-week stretches. I think for players who change positively, I get taken out to the woodshed in this book because I trashed J.D. Martinez back in whenever J.D. Martinez showed up in Detroit and turned into Babe Ruth. And I was like, this was at the early age of this. I said, you know, guys do this all the time. They show up, they have 3 good weeks, and likely as not, he's not going to change. We had 1,000 at-bats of J.D. Martinez that said he wasn't going to change. But you know what? J.D. Martinez was at the forefront of these guys who said, I can change who I am as a player. You know, you look at Marlon Byrd, who comes up in the book. You look at Justin Turner, and you look at all the guys that have come since. And that's something that we can look at now. And now, so every player who does this, who makes a change now, we kind of have to take it a little more seriously than we used to. And I think that's one of the great lessons of J.D. Martinez. But to answer the question, Connor, I think that in the moment, I think you've got to maintain skepticism, because over 2 weeks, it could be a change or it could be a guy who hasn't changed and just is... It's variance, man. It's still baseball. Mm.
Which leads us to the curious case of White Sox catcher James McCann, who has been nothing short of brilliant this year. But this is a guy with a career OPS plus of 81 who is now outperforming that by 57 points at 138. He's slashing 338, 379, 507, and is receiving new plaudits as a receiver, as a handler of pitchers, and everybody just says they love this guy. Do you think it's possible the White Sox have found something, or is this a classic example of what you're talking about in variance?
I think it's a little bit of both. If you look at McCann, he is actually hitting better than he has in the past. There are numbers that the baseball savant, the StatCast guys, come up with that tell you, you know, how far, how well is this player actually hitting versus his results. And you know, James McCann has an expected WOBA of 345, which is to say, not bad. Basically, he's a, yeah, I mean, that you'll take that. I'm more interested in the framing thing, because we have a lot of evidence that indicates that catchers can become better, they can learn better how to set up pitches. So I trust McCann's defensive improvement, even though, you know, you guys have heard me on framing before, and I don't really want to make that speech, but that's real right now. And I think as a hitter, it's probably a mix of hitting in good luck and actually improving the quality of his contact. So, yeah, I think McCann's a better player than he was a year ago. I was surprised that the Tigers let him go. I know they wanted to give the job to Grainer, and, you know, saving a couple of bucks on the margins with McCann, but, I mean, that was a pretty solid pickup. Even if James McCann had been the player he was last year, last couple of years with the Tigers, that was a pretty good pickup. But McCann has actually improved his game, and now I'm not saying he's Tyler Flowers, but he's on that track.
So given the circumstances around Dallas Keuchel and Craig Kimbrell here, do you think it's more likely than not that they've got handshake agreements, or at least on basic contract framework? Or is this going to be just like a free agency where you've got all kinds of teams hopping in and, you know, overextending themselves for players that can play now, theoretically?
We're right back where we were in January, right? So you go back to the offseason, and nobody's really sweating the June 3rd deadline because, you know, the draft pick is the draft pick is the draft pick. But then you get to March and April, and teams are like, well, why am I giving up the draft pick for a guy for 2 months of a player, essentially? Well, now I think we're right back where we started, which is you have two players who are somewhat flawed. You know, Keuchel, not a power guy, has had partial seasons in recent years, definitely needs a good field defense behind him. Craig Kimbrell lost a tick on his fastball, lost two ticks on his command. If these guys want to get paid like superstars, I think that same disconnect that existed in December and January exists now. Except now you've also got the question of, if I sign a guy who hasn't pitched yet this year, what am I going to get out of him over 3 months? I mean, if you look at the track record of these guys who miss half seasons, it's not really that good. I mean, we don't have a lot of examples of it. But you look at, you know, Steven Drew, Kendrys Morales, these guys, these free agents who signed late, really haven't performed very well. I mean, we've got the example of Tim Raines from 1987, but I don't think that's terribly relevant today. I think there are still concerns with getting these guys signed. And really, I think it's going to come down to do these players want to sign a one-year make-good deal and try again next winter, or are they still insisting on getting the 3 to 4 year I'm a 3-win player contract that they were after last year? I just don't think either player is valued in the market as a high quality free agent. Not because the market's bad for free agents, not because teams are colluding, but because each of these two players has warts.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, and I think this takes on, I always use the term MacGuffin, which was what Alfred Hitchcock called the thing that moved the plot, whatever it happens to be, the nuclear codes or the attaché case with the secret information in it, Marcellus Wallace's briefcase with the glowing whatever it is in it, that they represent more than what they actually are. They represent, is my team trying? Does my team care? And I think that you have been, Joe, very strongly evangelizing for teams to spend money on veteran free agents, because that's what you're supposed to do. And that's part of the tacit contract that's made with a city and a fandom. How do you square what you absolutely say as an objective analyst, I think is absolutely true about them, with your belief that sometimes signing a veteran free agent is just the right thing to do?
I think that you have to make good baseball decisions. I think that spending money for the sake of spending money isn't what you should be doing. You should be making good baseball decisions. And I think if Craig Kimbrel or Dallas Keuchel makes your team better, that's great. But let's not pretend that Dallas Keuchel or Craig Kimbrel is going to make your team a lot better, I guess, especially halfway through a season. You know, you're talking about literally adding, you know, Craig Kimbrel might be worth a win and a half. So now you're talking about him being worth a win. You know, Dallas Keuchel, same thing, two-win pitcher maybe. And again, there's a lot of variance around the mean there. If you put Dallas Keuchel on Milwaukee, he's not going to look as good as he is if you put him on the Astros. He needs that solid, not just in terms of skill players, but in terms of a team that's good at putting its infielders in front of the baseball, shifting and what have you. I think that we focused on these two guys because it's unusual to have two players of this nature. But I think there's a baseball conversation. And there's the conversation you're talking about. And I think it's really, you got to be careful about not getting the two mixed up. You cannot sign Kimbrel and Keuchel for very good baseball reasons.
Joe, we appreciate it, man. Thank you as always.
Thanks, fellas.
Nice show.
That is Joe Sheehan of Sports Illustrated and Baseball America. And speaking of Baseball America, Joe said he is not a draft guy. You know who is? J.J. Cooper, yep. The executive editor of Baseball America. He can tell us about new Cubs, new Sox, and the quality of this draft and picks upcoming as well, what we're looking at, how these players are being evaluated, and what they mean to these respective Chicago teams. So all the latest from an expert is straight ahead next on Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
That ball's hit well. Vaughn gives that a ride, and Vaughn hits it off the scoreboard.
He cranks one deep into left center field. Back goes the center fielder Ward. It's gone!
Oh. And he gets into it, and that one is gone. Andrew Vaughn with a two-run shot.
Little different sound off the bat when it's off the barrel of an Easton BB core than it is when we hear the crack of it ringing off a barrel of ash. Here to tell us about bridging that gap and more is J.J. Cooper of Baseball America. He is the executive editor, and he joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Welcome to the Bernstein and McKnight Show, J.J. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good. Trying to figure out what the White Sox have in this apparently very polished first base stick.
Very polished first base. But also, most importantly, one of the best bats in this class. I think that's easy to say. You know, he was the Golden Spikes winner last year as the top player in college baseball. And I personally think Adley Rutschman's a little bit better hitter. That's fine. He was the number one pick in the draft. The White Sox didn't have a choice of picking him. And I just look at what Vaughn's done. I thought it was the right pick for the White Sox at three. Their choices were a really good bat out of Vandy, J.J. Bleday, they could have chosen, or a couple of very talented high school hitters. But Vaughn was clearly the bet to me, the best hitter of those three. And you're talking about major power potential as well. And when you have a chance to get that, it's not a lot of position versatility, but if you've got the middle order bat, it worked out really well for the White Sox many, many, many years ago when they took Frank Thomas out of Auburn in a very kind of similar kind of profile.
So for White Sox fans who see or have anxiety for every corner they turn, I'm not saying I'm one of them, but maybe, yeah, you had a shortstop with a whole bunch of athleticism on the board. You had an outfielder that you could have gone with as well. And I'll read you, not that you don't know this, but one of the write-ups on Vaughn's athleticism says he has a very athletic swing, despite being decidedly unathletic in every other way. Does that worry you? Should that have moved the White Sox off of this guy, even as good as the bat is?
I don't really think so, because the funny thing about it is I can come up with several really good hitters over the years who you would not describe as premium athletes otherwise. I do think there actually is a chance that Vaughn could early in his minor league career play some third base. I do not expect that he will be a major league third baseman in any way. But it is the feel for the, it is the ability to recognize very early, very advanced for his age. And most importantly, it is the ability to not just put bat on ball, but really drive the ball to all fields. This is a guy who has a chance to hit for average and power. We don't get access. We're not a club. We don't get full access to the TrackMan stats, but from everything we've heard, everyone talks about exit velos and all nowadays. Yes, as you made a good point, it was with a metal bat, although the metal bats now are a little bit more detuned than they used to be. But his exit velos were exceptional, were really kind of stood out in this draft class. Again, the funny thing is that the thing, if I'm a White Sox fan, I understand that trepidation in that the White Sox have taken a number of very high picks in recent years who are guys who are corner infielder first base types. Vaughn is the best of that group. Now, what that means for the Gavin Sheets and maybe the Jake Burgers and maybe the Zach Collins of the world down the road is a kind of an interesting question. But you take the talent, and Vaughn was, to me, the best player on the board at pick three.
White Sox scouts mentioned exit velo, and I was wondering, do they have TrackMan or StatCast in the Cape Cod League? Because to me, that's all that matters. I don't care about the aluminum exit velo. I care about wood exit velo and whether it sustains.
Most of these players, at some point, they have also gotten them from various means, exit velos with wood bats. In fact, actually, on the high school side, the workouts now that lead up to the draft are a lot of times about getting pitchers and hitters in front of TrackMan as much as they are getting them in front of decision makers, because that's your opportunity. If there's a pitcher, say, who you hadn't gotten in front of TrackMan, well, hey, let's bring him to our facility and let's get him on TrackMan so we can see spin rates, so we can see how his breaking ball moves, things like that. But the other thing about that is that, again, it's not perfect, but we have seen, college stats do matter, and they are also a part of the predictive ability of looking at what a player is going to be down the road. And Andrew Vaughn, there are very, very, very few, really almost no red flags as far as a hitter in his college production as well. And obviously he's done that. If you're talking about comparing, say, him to J.J. Blade, who was probably, a very logical, other option, the Vanderbilt outfielder, J.J. Blade has hit for average before this year, but J.J. Blade, who may lead Division I in home runs this year, he never hit double digits in home runs before this year. Andrew Vaughn has a nice, healthy, lengthy track record of hitting both with wood and with metal, and have been, considered one of the best bats in his age group for quite a while.
Talking with J.J. Cooper, executive editor of Baseball America, on the Bernstein and McKnight Show on Sports Radio 670. The Score, the segment brought to you by the Art of Pizza. Art of Pizza celebrating 30 years in Lakeview. Art of Pizza, located at 3033 North Ashland. Stop in for up to 18 varieties of hot, fresh stuffed pan and thin crust pizzas. The slices are available, and they're very, very good.
Oh, yes, they are.
Yes. Delivery begins 11 a.m. every day. Call 773-327-5600. Visit artofpizzachicago.com.
J.J., Ryan Jensen was the Cubs' first-round pick at 27, and so he seemed to surprise a lot of people. Will TrackMan or kind of tracks or pitch effects, all that kind of stuff, will it matter for Ryan as he try and shapes a repertoire that's a little deeper than a 99-mile-an-hour fastball?
Absolutely. And now, again, with all these players we're talking about, that is something that is goes into the model for all the teams now. Yeah, we were definitely surprised to see him go where he went. Again, the fastball is really good. He has not generally had elite swing and miss with that fastball. There have been questions about the control at times. And, we'll have to see, because, again, we're not cocky enough to say, well, we had him ranked way lower than that. Clearly the Cubs did a terrible pick there. At the same time, I would be comfortable in saying that that was not a consensus pick at that spot. There are a number of college pitchers that come to mind who I would have, kind of expected to see taken at that spot instead. But maybe the Cubs are right, and, and kind of consensus is wrong. But that's something where, you know, we've seen in recent years, you know, that I want to see, you know, if the Cubs can develop a pitcher like Jensen, because something that's been really kind of a struggle for the Cubs.
See, and
I feel over the years, I felt much more comfortable in the Cubs' ability to develop young hitters than I have young pitchers. And so we'll see, you know, if they can kind of make this work, or if this is going to be a struggle like they've had with some of their other recent high draft pick pitchers.
JJ, and that's why the Jensen pick to me is so fascinating, because they've had the track record of not developing arms, and they take a guy that not everybody saw going at 27. Can you reverse engineer something with the Jensen pick about how the Cubs are valuing college pitching coming into this draft? Something maybe, you know, not everybody had looked at or expected them to make an assessment on.
It's tough with that, because obviously nowadays advantages that teams glean, the half-life of those seems to be measured in minutes, not hours, not days, not years. You know, a couple of years ago, the Astros clearly had an advantage in that they figured out with the high-speed electronic cameras that essentially they could bring them and kind of have almost like a mini TrackMan, you know, when they brought them to high school games, because they could derive spin rates from them and things like that. And when I was at, high school events this spring, you would see 10 edutronics. You know, there was a third of the league was bringing edutronics to those events. So again, these things get caught. Everyone figures them out very quickly. That said, if the Cubs have some sort of thing they have seen with Jensen, they're not talking, understandably, about it. They're going to keep that kind of in the back pocket. When it comes to the development, though, yes, one thing that does stand out is there is an argument that can be made that you take arm speed nowadays, and it is with the ability to design pitches to kind of essentially graph someone else's slider onto your, you know, because you can, with the high speed cameras and with the Rapsodo and with all the tech, you can kind of very quickly speed up a feedback loop to kind of understand, oh, cool. This is why this pitch isn't working for me. Let's try to do this now. Okay, that works. There is the argument that can be made that the biggest thing that you can't teach is arm speed. You know, is a guy who's able to generate velocity. You can improve velocity, but a guy who throws 90 to 92, you're really hoping to get them to 92 to 94 much more than you're hoping to get him to, you know, elite velocity. Jensen has elite velocity. Now the real question is going to be, are they able to both develop the control and command and develop the secondaries to kind of match the velocity?
Do you know, ballpark figure, what percentage of draft-eligible pitchers have already had Tommy John surgery?
I did a study on this about 5 years ago. And, I mean, when you say – the tough part about it is when you say draft-eligible, but of the players drafted, I want to say it's basically now close to something like a little less than 1 in 3. And of that group who does get drafted, many of them are going to go on to have Tommy John at some point in the future. Quite simply.
I always wondered how teams look at that, the inevitability of Tommy John. Like, if a guy's gotten it out of the way already and has already recovered from it and reestablished his velocity, or if you're the White Sox and you're, you know, some of these other rounds and you've gone through what you've gone through with Michael Kopech and Dane Dunning and these hard throwers, and you know that it's more likely than not that it's going to happen at some point, how that affects your valuation.
I think it really does kind of depend on the team. You made a good point that the White Sox are a team that has had kind of significant TJ issues in recent years. Although in their case, the Rangers look at them and go, man, that's not TJ issues at all. The Rangers, the majority of their top pitching prospects that they've drafted in recent years, right now are recovering from Tommy John. But I do think it kind of leads to kind of a, different teams measure risk different ways to kind of depending on where you are kind of in your Tommy John cycle. But there is argument you will hear at times that what you said, hey, if a guy's had TJ and he's recovered from it, the key part of that is he's recovered from it, because not everyone makes it back from TJ and with the same stuff that they had before. That's kind of a misnomer. There are guys who the fastball just never comes back, or the command never comes back, you know, afterwards. But if they have, okay, then they probably have a period of time where they're going to be okay. And although there's also the argument that is made that a pitcher who's had Tommy John surgery is that is often indicative that there's something either in their frame, in their mechanics, something in how they pitch that makes them more likely to have injury issues down the road. A pitcher who's never had these issues, to put it quite bluntly, Trevor Bauer has thrown more pitches, you know, when he was in college than pretty much anybody. You know, he was 140, you know, 130 to 140 a night, you know, for UCLA when he was back as a draft prospect. He's never had TJ. I would feel more comfortable saying that he's going to avoid having elbow surgery, even though he's got a very heavy workload, than a pitcher who at 22 has already had TJ. But that is a nebulous topic that no one seems to have a full answer to. Some teams are absolutely, the Nationals embrace taking guys who've had Tommy John. Mm-hmm. They do that over and over and over. And then there are other teams who kind of stay far away from us. I'd kind of describe the White Sox as somewhere in the middle on that.
Lastly and briefly, a thumbnail on the second round pick for the Cubs, UCLA infielder Chase Strumpf. What is he?
What he is a productive middle infielder who, this is where teams have really gotten where they value this more and more. Teams look for middle infielders, college middle infielders, with some track record of production who have okay defensive value. I would not describe Strumpf as a guy who's going to be a gold glove down the road or anything like that, but he can play second, he can play third, he can hit. Really, to be honest, I would describe him as a kind of, he fits in what the Cubs have produced, like the Listellas, who I can't believe Tommy Listella's hitting as many homers as he had this year for the Angels, but the Listellas, the David Bodies, the guys like that who you would describe them as gamers, and it used to be that was a pejorative, but the reality is these are guys who actually have been productive big league players, and that's kind of what they're hoping for in Strumpf down the road.
JJ, appreciate it. Great stuff. We'll continue following everybody over at Baseball America.
Thanks, guys.
That is JJ Cooper, executive editor of Baseball America. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Nothing beats championship hockey. Your Chicago Wolves are tied at one game apiece with the Charlotte Checkers in the Calder Cup Finals. Wolves are home tomorrow, Thursday, Saturday at Allstate Arena for game 3, 4, and 5. Visit ChicagoWolves.com. Been a while for you to do the midday midway. You must be backed up with stuff.
I've got stuff. A minor league team has undergone a name change, and we've got to bring it up. Plus, I sat in some of the most exclusive seats in Major League Baseball over the weekend, and I've got the full report.
I've got. I also have a minor league team. I don't know if it's the same one because there are two that are awesome, and this is something I don't want to ever stop, this idea of alternate minor league team names.
No, it's the best.
It's producing incredible hats and all sorts of cool things. Also, scientists have tested the DNA in Loch Ness to see what they can learn.
Nessie?
And they believe they have learned something, and let's just say they're not closing any doors on anything quite yet.
Crazy stuff in the midday midway, as always. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, midway.
The midday midway.
1, 2.
Midway, the most important of the year.
3, 4.
The most exciting thing on the midway.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Our objective is midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the midday midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Midday midway time. We've been baseball busy going through some retroactive analysis of the Cubs that was sparked by what Carlos Gonzalez said yesterday about what he, as a Colorado Rocky, saw in last year's Cubs. And we talked about their level of confidence and what he talked about keeping your head up. And, hell, he was a hero yesterday in his first game. And if that's it, still worth it, right?
One game.
If that's it. If he gives you that catch and he gives you that hit in one game, it's probably still worth it.
But screaming and yelling about how one game could win this division. It'll be a dogfight. If Carlos gave you that one, it matters.
A little bit of a rescue outcome for them. Joe Sheehan had all sorts of information on the Cubs and Sox and MLB, and J.J. Cooper gave you the full draft breakdown of the names we have so far.
Yeah, I really come away explained on Andrew Vaughn a little bit as the White Sox third pick in the draft. Really a big fan. Thought it was going to be C.J. Abrams, the shortstop out of Blessed Trinity. Really like Vaughn. Okay, midday, midway. Here's where we start. Minor league ball clubs rebrand themselves from time to time. You know, different celebrations going on in the community, this kind of thing. You know that I went to high school in Appleton, Wisconsin, Appleton was the home of the Foxes for a good long time. While I was there, it was the Timber Rattlers. They've had some pretty good players come through. Alex Rodriguez, David Ortiz, and the like. They didn't stay very long. And neither will this brand new name. June is Dairy Month, apparently. I was unaware of this.
I believe it's National Cheese Day.
Today is?
You can look that up. I believe today's National Cheese Day.
Did you have an alert?
An automatic phone
like
push?
Set on the, no, so June 20th, to celebrate as part of the Salute to Cows Night, the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers, they are a Brewers affiliate now, longtime Mariners affiliate, now a Brewers affiliate. They have changed their names to the Wisconsin Udder Tuggers. The logo is a cow with udders flying at you as it rounds the bases. Bell cow, you know, on the little thing, the bell going on, the horns and the whole deal. They are the Wisconsin Udder Tuggers. Great logo, and I'm going to need a hat. Gotta have an Udder Tuggers hat.
I will see your Udder Tuggers, and I will raise you what the Brooklyn Cyclones are going to become for Seinfeld night.
Okay.
Seinfeld night is July 13th. Lloyd Braun is going to be there. Lloyd Braun bobblehead and the Maestro bobblehead.
Oh, yes. Beautiful.
That's our buddy Mark Metcalf,
right,
who played the Maestro. Fans will have the opportunity to meet the industrious former Mayor Dinkins advisor who can do anything he puts his mind to. So it will be Lloyd Braun. And they have decided to become the Brooklyn Cyclones, who, by the way, play in an awesome venue right next to the boardwalk at Coney Island.
They're Coney Island, right?
They're Coney Island, and Coney Island's all redone and revamped, and it's fabulous. The ballpark's amazing. 7,000 seat ballpark. It's just a terrific place. You can actually see the Cyclone beyond center field.
You don't have to step on needles or anything on your way to the ballpark anymore.
Not the way it used to be.
Good.
Not the way it used to be. But they are going to be the Brooklyn Marble Rye. For the famous Marble Rye episode involving the parents and George's parents, etc.
And the fish hook.
Yes, and the uniforms are wonderful. It says Marble Rye in a Hebraic font, so it looks like letters actually spelling out Marble Rye. And on the back, each uniform number is a tag that says now serving. So it's a deli number
nice.
That you have grabbed, now serving with an arrow pointing to your number, and you've got the rye bread that's the logo on the hat. Nicely done, nicely conceived. And I was on the way into the gym the other day while we're talking about this, and I stopped a guy on the stairs. I was heading down to the locker room, and I said, "What hat is that?" And it was the Medusas. It was a jellyfish. And I said, "What is this?" He said, "It's the Copa de la Diversión or Copa Deportivo.
Yeah, that's the
fun cup.
Spanish Heritage Night, a week, essentially, in minor league baseball."
And what's going on is you get rated in points for how much fun you have. And every team is coming up with these spectacular Spanish versions of themselves that loosely correlate to them. And the quality of these hats is just great. And I imagine they're just selling the hell out of them.
That's where we got the Flying Chunkless last year. And the Cangrejos Fantasmas, the Ghost Crabs, two of the best minor leagues. We're just adding to our minor league experience here. The Udder Tuggers, the Chunkless, the Marble Rye.
More and more and more of this. I cannot get enough of this.
So I was out on Friday, out yesterday for the celebration of a bachelor party. Score listeners will remember the Cupcake, the Tiniest Dancer, one Adam Harris, former overnight producer, did a whole bunch of updates and all that kind of stuff for you and Terry back in the day as well. Good friend of mine and his brother celebrated their bachelor party. He did not know he was going to Phoenix. They showed up at the airport and surprised him with a ticket, told him then that he was going. Didn't know that we were going to a Diamondbacks-Mets game either. So we rode at the ballpark and surprised him that way too. Then, instead of giving the bachelor his ticket, as everybody else, it's a group of about 25 of us. It was a huge group. Instead, the bachelor was given a plastic bag.
Okay.
Inside the plastic bag, he was told it was a ticket, and instead, it was a much too tight Speedo bathing suit.
Yes.
The one that shows off the thighs.
I know where you're headed.
And all that kind of stuff. So we're at the Diamondbacks game, so obviously, he sees the swimsuit and realizes that we had gotten tickets to the pool in right center at the Arizona Diamondbacks game. I had never thought that I'd be in that pool or around it or anything. And first off, I got to tell you, those are some of the best seats in baseball. You don't realize, or maybe you do sometimes, but you see that pool. You could put your beer on the outfield fence. I mean, you are right there. You can, you shouldn't, but you could affect the game from those seats. They are right there. So amidst all the kinds of conversations, we were yelling at Adam Jones and telling him he had that solid lower half and got the hat tip from him because he thought that was hysterical. Good. So that was fun. We took the picture of the four of them in their Speedos where they look like they're a failed relay team during the national anthem. All good stuff there. But what we decided to do is to get all of us up for it, like it was a playoff game, to really get excited for it, was we bet the first inning live odds. No runs in the first inning. So the Diamondbacks go through. They mow them down. 1-2-3. No big deal. And up steps Diamondbacks leadoff man, Ketel Marte. You know Ketel Marte. He didn't have a whole lot of pop. He's kind of a rangy shortstop.
Ruined your day.
We're 2-0 in the count. Steven Matz, Ketel Marte. The pool is, we've got everybody in the stands cheering for no outs in the first inning. And then Ketel Marte happens.
Saw Ketel Marte putting some of that stickum on the handle of his bat. First of all, he starts out with this yellow stuff, which is called lizard skins. They wrap them around the handle of the bat. But, I mean, he has layer after layer after layer.
There it goes. It's gone. Wow, Ketel Marte. Just like that. 1-0 Diamondbacks. Don't change a thing on that bat.
It's the stickum. Wow, good start.
A first career leadoff home run for Ketel Marte. 1-0 D-back.
Of course.
He had never done it before. Dan, this was the third longest home run in baseball this year.
And I love the fact that Bob Brenly's making fun of him for having all the lizard skin and stick him on his back. All these kids today with that, all the stuff on their bats.
That ball left immediately. The pool was silenced. It was 480.
Oy. A group of New Zealand scientists hunting the Loch Ness Monster have made a surprising discovery, according to their lead researcher, the University of Otago's Professor Neil Jamel, who specializes in genomics, ecology, and evolutionary biology, and his team have tested hundreds of water samples from three different depths in the hope of capturing the DNA of the Loch Ness Monster. They collected DNA from skin and scales and feathers and fur and feces left by a variety of creatures and sent them to labs in New Zealand, Australia, Denmark, and France for analysis. He said the public will have to wait until his press conference next month to find out if the team found any evidence of the legendary beast, but he hinted the preliminary findings were surprising and the myth was likely to endure. He refused to say which hypothesis they were leaning toward, but one theory is the monster is a plesiosaur that somehow survived the period dinosaurs were wiped out. Another is the creature is a sturgeon or a giant catfish. And he said 1,000 people have there are 1,000 sightings, 1,000 different people. And he says too many rational, level-headed people have said they have seen what they believe to be a creature in the loch. The last sighting was in March last year by an American couple visiting the ruins of Urquhart Castle. And they said they saw a large shadow moving under the water, which they estimated to be around 30 feet. So let's just say the legend lives, and there will be a press conference next month
to
find out what they know.
So cool.
Yep. This segment brought to you by ABC Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electric. That's the Midday Midway. All right, it's time for time to separate fact from fiction and fact from fantasy when it comes to the White Sox and this apparent effort to make sure that they reach the playoffs.
We will deal in cold, hard fact, but we will not forget the fun, the little White Sox conversation on the other side. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.